Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. He is the only
wake
way.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late. Everybody.
Wake up late.
Wake up.
It's late. Time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Coral Springs, and now you know.
We're the hottest show in this place.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
I said 1, 2, 3. Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida. It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida. Now, let's start the show.
Welcome to a special edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida, and I don't know, let's call this a one-on-one with Dougie. I'm here with a special guest and good friend. I think I can say good friend.
Yeah.
Clayton Fletcher.
Yeah, we are good friends, but yet somehow this feels too intimate.
Yeah.
This one-on-one.
Just you and I.
we usually have a buffer, someone, yeah, just in case.
It's, yeah, usually somebody around here that's, yeah, like, so where are you from, Clayton? You know, go ahead and tell him. Tell this person I know. You know, we're in the studios today just before, it's pre-show in a sense. We got the Wise Guys Comedy Show tonight starring Clayton Fletcher.
I'm so excited. I think it's my fourth time,
yeah,
doing the Wise Guys Comedy Show.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm really excited to be back. I can't wait for the amazing food.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have a good crowd tonight. It is raining, so we'll see.
I know, it's like one of those things you worry about. Like I always say, it's one thing when you're a comic and you go into a venue. You know, yeah, it's great when that, in a sense, I got to worry about my act. I just got to feel, which I want to talk a little bit about, you know, little things, you know, any type of habits and stuff as a comic. Yeah, that. But then when you're running the venue,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like not to mention, I got a call this afternoon or this morning from tonight's feature.
Oh, good. Now we get to trash talk him a little bit.
Well, I'm, you know, I mean, I like the guy. I booked the guy.
Yeah.
You know, but he, you know, calls me today and says I'm sick.
Right.
And I can't make it, which, you know, again, I'm not, you know, who am I to say, you know, I'm not going to be like Ferris Bueller's principal.
Right.
And go to his house and check if he's home right now.
Right.
Or, you know, check his Facebook and see if he's really sick and just didn't want to drive, you know, for $75, $100.
I'll tell you this, Dougie. I've been doing comedy about 15 years.
Yeah.
I've never canceled a show.
Really?
Never. If I got another job that I had to take, you know, if it's like the little Irish pub on the corner that doesn't pay anything.
Right.
And then a theater calls, then I'll cancel for that reason. But I would always give the booker ample notice. And if I'm sick, I perform anyway because I'm from Baltimore originally and I grew up idolizing Cal Ripken.
Right.
And he never missed a game, so neither do I.
Yeah, well, that is a good idol right there, right?
Yeah.
How many games, consecutive games he played?
2,600.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, some insane number.
You know, now that you mentioned, I'm trying to think if I've never canceled a gig. Like, you know.
Right.
Even if it's never been like an incident where if like your car breaks down and you just can't get there even.
Yeah.
You know, which is sometimes. I actually will say this. The only time I actually didn't make a gig was at the Looney Bin in Oklahoma City where I was stuck on an airplane at the Fort Lauderdale Airport that never left.
Oh, well, there's not much they can do about that.
I mean,
what are you supposed to do? Drive to Oklahoma City?
Yeah. Somebody get me a pogo stick.
I mean, some things we can't help.
Right.
You know, I've had situations like that before, especially when the gigs are booked really tight together, like one night and then another night, right, in another city, another night. Then, you know, it is possible that things will happen. That happens to every comic, right, in the world. But, you know, unless you're in the hospital,
right,
you know, I don't see any reason.
Unless there's a tetanus shot involved.
Yeah. I had a car accident once in New Orleans. I had a week down in New Orleans. I don't even remember the name of the place, so forgive me if you're listening. And the first night I was there, I was trying to find the place, and it was raining, and it was dark, and I crashed into a car because I looked down at the directions for 1 second, right, or what felt like 1 second. And then the next thing I know, I got a broken rib and everything. And I called the booker. First person I called, I didn't call the ambulance.
Right.
I didn't call the police. That's called the booker right away. And I said, listen, I just had a car accident. My ribs hurt a little bit, but I'm going to be a little late, but I'll be there tonight. He said, are you crazy? You just had a car accident. I was like, well, the show must go on.
Exactly. I mean,
that's where I'm from.
Well, yeah, even in a recent, when Mike Vecchione was in town, we had a show at the Black Box Theater in Fort Pierce, Sunrise Theater.
Yeah.
And just so happens, at around 12:30 that afternoon, I'm sitting in my bed, or laying in my bed, kind of sitting up. I don't know.
Yeah, be honest.
I don't have to be that, that descriptive. But
what were you wearing?
When the second onslaught of a pain of my kidney stones.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that's when I ran to I ended up driving to the emergency room that day.
Yeah.
Went through that whole thing.
Right.
And then, when everything calmed down, nurse sends me away. I'm sitting there groping in pain trying to drive to the emergency room. And the first call I made was to my potential backup, if I can't make it. I called Perry Sack. I said, hey, man, are you free tonight? Because I may not be able to open for Mike. And I'm on my way to the ER.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll talk to you again. I don't know if my appendix ruptured. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with me.
And Perry said, what's it pay?
Yeah, exactly. You sound like you're groaning, but how much does it pay? And do you think you can negotiate a little more for me? So,
especially last minute. Once you hear that desperation in Dougie's voice, you got to try to hit him up for a few more bucks.
Dougie sound desperate. Yeah, I heard he was passing a kidney stone.
Talk about dangerous, Dougie.
Holy shit.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
So just in the idea of business, so I call him right away. So I want to make sure the venue doesn't, plus Mike needed a ride because Mike was here. Somebody had to drive him. So I'm thinking of all that. All right, I got the backup. He said, I even called the booker. Hey, I'm on my way. I don't know what's going to happen. So everything's set up, though. We're good to go. Now, all right, I go through the pain and everything. After the morphine kicks in, I get the scans and everything. You got a kidney stone. Oh, no problem. It's about the size of rice. How bad could that be anymore?
Oh, yeah, right.
And the doc says, hey, it's down there. You'll probably get some more pain. Who knows? And so right away, I'm sitting there. I look at my wife. I go, yeah, I feel pretty good. I think I'm going to do the show tonight.
Go do the show, yeah.
Why am I not going to do the show?
Right.
I mean, I could say I'm not going to do the show, but I want to do the show because I wanted, if a night goes by and I'm not on stage.
Right.
I feel shitty. You know what I mean? I feel like, I got to be doing this.
And even worse than that, just the thought of Perry Sack getting your money.
I know.
It's a very upsetting thought. That you don't
he's gonna be sitting there like, I killed, it was a great crowd. I'm like, fucking asshole,
best show we ever had without you, perfect.
Which by the way, I will say that Casey said it was probably out of the 100 and something shows they've had, there was one of the funniest nights they ever had.
Yeah, well, Mike Vecchione is a good friend of mine, I'm proud to say, by the way.
Yeah,
amazing comedian, great guy too. I'm not surprised at all.
He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he fits right in. He's Italian.
Right.
By the way, you're wearing your Ancestry.com t-shirt right now.
Right.
I want to paint the picture for people. Dougie is sitting here in his black Ancestry.com, which I assume the people can buy on your website.
Go to DougieAlmeida.com.
DougieAlmeida, if you can figure out how to spell it, .com. And I recently went to Ancestry.com to find out if everything I've been told my whole life was true.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was part Italian. Turns out I'm 25% Italian, which probably explains why I love doing the Wise Guys comedy show.
I don't know why I like these meatballs.
Yeah, it's in the blood.
Yeah.
But everything else we've been told was lies. Back in the day before the internet, your grandparents would just lie about where you were from,
Yeah, like all grandparents said they were in the war.
Everybody wasn't in the war, okay? It wasn't that big a war.
If every father said that he was in the war.
Yeah, they were all in the war.
And they would say, look, I was shot. No, Dad, I was in those immunization shots.
Right. Yeah, they had them, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody was in the war. Everybody was there the night Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points.
Yeah. And banged his 1,000th girl.
They were all there for everything.
They saw it. It was all there at the same
time.
No
one missed it.
Yeah, I lived through the Depression. I was in Auschwitz. And I walked there the whole way. We're talking about commitment to the
absolutely.
To it. Let's you mentioned one thing about canceling a gig for, let's say, a bigger or better opportunity.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times comics will even ask me, young comics will say, hey, whatever happens if that happens. I'm like, well, to me, as a comic, not as a booker, I'm a comic before I'm a booker.
Right.
You know, and yeah, if I'm doing my show, the Wise Guys Comedy Show, and the improv says, hey, we need to feature an MC tonight, right. I'm there. No problem. I'll find somebody to replace me.
Yeah.
Somebody else will get an opportunity because I just got an opportunity.
Absolutely.
And I've had that a few times in my show where somebody says, hey, man, I got booked. I'm like, no problem. Don't worry about it. You know, I would do the same thing.
Well, any booker should understand. I find it helps a lot if you, number one, inform the booker with as much advance notice as possible so that you're not calling them like the day before.
Now,
the gig.
Like with something like that, a better gig, like what would be a cutoff? Because like I would, if the improv called me and it's basically 6 hours or, you know, it's the day of the show.
Right.
I would probably have to consider it. And I think the only way you can get out of that is probably if you have a backup, like a really somebody who's a step up above you.
Yeah.
Who can fill in for you.
Yeah. You want to be able to recommend someone else. You know, I can't do it tonight. I'm really sorry. They just called and they need me, and you got to understand I got to go do that. However, I've already checked with, you know, Comic A,
right,
the disgruntled clown. I'm just, because I happen to be looking at a poster of a comic called the disgruntled clown.
Out of all the fucking people to pick.
Yeah, you know, I can't make it because I'm going to be the improv, but I got a great substitute.
Now, would you tell the booker that? Do you think the booker should understand if you say, hey, you know, they're not going to take it personally if you say, hey, you know, the...
Well, it depends on the booker. And from what I understand from the many times I've been down here with you, the scene here is a little bit petty. And it seems like a lot of the Florida bookers kind of have these like silly rivalries against each other. And, you know, if you work for him, you can't work for me and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's a kind of a Florida specific thing. And I'm sure it happens in other places as well. But at least in New York, you know, where I do most of my work, in New York and surrounding areas, they would all understand, you know, if a feature spot opened up at Caroline's and I was booked at a much smaller venue,
right,
I think everybody would understand, especially because in New York, it's much easier to find me a disgruntled clown to replace me as opposed to maybe, you know, I don't know how many comics are available on short notice here, but I think it's polite to always offer to replace yourself. But, you know, then you got to do what's best for you. I mean, you might even end up burning a bridge, but depending on how big the opportunity is, you might burn the bridge and never look back. But I always consider that a last resort. You know, I hate to make a commitment and then break it.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a day of, I'd have to, you know, I'd be 50-50 on it, even if it was a better gig. But yeah, for the most part, you probably would lean, obviously, to make your, you know, you got to better your career.
Yeah. And you don't know if they're ever going to call again.
Yeah. And you know what? And here's the thing. And it's not that, like, I would expect from what I've seen in other stories, other comic situations, where that happens, they won't call again, not because they were pissed and they were really pissed off at you, but because there's just something about that. You know, it's like when you're a kid, you go up to a girl and, hey, you want to skate couples with me? And she goes, no, you know, or you have a bad experience with it. You're probably not going to go up to her again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
So, I don't know.
So wait, in that scenario, are you the girl?
I'm wondering, see, how does that work out?
So doing comedy is ice skating now?
Is this rollerblading or are we fucking ice, like skating? Like the four wheel, I don't know, it doesn't matter.
Couples only.
Yeah. Do you ever go skating? Went to a roller rink?
I was all about it. When I was a little boy, that was my favorite thing. And when I got a little bit older, I think I was in eighth grade, and my mom and dad let me go to late skate.
Yeah.
Because we used to do like 7 to 10.
Yeah.
And then after that, they had the 11 to 1 on Saturday nights.
It's like date night.
Yeah. And my parents, you know, if I was a good boy all week, but you know what else? If I was ever bad, then it'd be the first thing they take away.
Yeah. Guess what? No late skate.
Yeah. You screwed up. You didn't do your homework. Yeah. So guess who's not going to late skate?
I'm thinking about that. we went to down in South Florida. There was a skater called Galaxy Skateway.
Mm.
And, you know, it was like a Saturday afternoon. You'd go there in the afternoon. Everybody. Yeah. You know, you go to all these chicks, or they're like, and these are girls that didn't go to your middle school.
Right. Different
girls.
This
is like, you know, it's like, wow, that girl.
Absolutely.
You know, a little more shadier part of town than where I lived.
Yeah.
So there's a little more of, you know,
you were after the girls from the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah. I wanted the nasty girls. So, you know, I'd go to these skating rinks. So, you know, it's like you go and skate. Yeah. You're doing the shuffle and shit. Remember the shuffle?
Absolutely.
And eventually I got those speed skates with the kangaroo boots.
Oh, man. Speed you were showing
off. Yeah, man. Dude, I was.
You were showing
the
off.
Stopper, like when you, not the shitty skates where you have to almost look like you're bending forward, like doing like a ski jump.
No, no, no.
Like you're doing a fucking long jump and skis.
No, those are the rentals.
Those are the rentals with that little stub thing in the front.
Screw that.
You had the speed skates with this thing that was sticking out like a in this big. And you know, so you get to that, but now you're skating around, and you, now you're trying to find a chick. It's like, hey, couples skate, you know, find a, you got, now you got to go up and go up to chicks and go through that. So that was like, you know, the first,
Well, I went to Catholic school.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if I ever told you about this or if you ever heard me talk about it on stage, but, you know, in Catholic school, the main lesson I learned was that we were better than the public school kids. Yeah, you know, that's kind of what, they kind of instilled in us. A sense of superiority that I'm still trying to get rid of.
You guys are the chosen ones.
Yeah, like we were the chosen ones. And they were all sinners and heathens and awful people. So, you know, my viewpoint on all the public school girls that I would meet at Skateland, shout out to Skateland in Baltimore, was that they were all just sluts and it would be so easy if I could hook up with one of them.
You try to bang them in the bathroom. Yeah. You know.
Well, I mean, I was 12, Doug. I don't know if I was trying to bang them in the bathroom.
No, you weren't. I was still doing it. See, my problem, I had three older brothers. So
you learned that.
I was like, you know, there was days I was, I tell this, I think I told this story on the show before, but I remember I couldn't have been more than nine. I don't remember. I was a little kid. I walked out. We live in a three-bedroom house. I had three older brothers, two older brothers in one room, me and my other brother. And I'm walking out to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and I look down the hallway, and I see like a silhouette of a person. I flip the hallway light on. It's a naked woman.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're like 9, 10 years old, that's fucking... Yeah.
Because when we grew up, they didn't have internet.
Yeah, you didn't have naked images and
I think
stuff.
Every 10-year-old boy today has already seen a naked woman or two.
No, you know, I can still remember her hair. Like, you know what I mean? It was just so... Like as it's like fixated in my head. Like the first time you look at the sun too long.
Oh yeah.
Oh dude.
You'll never forget it.
I'm telling. And I can still remember it. It's like, oh, she giggled a little bit, and like a dope, I went into the bathroom, you know, and I did my thing, came out, and I didn't go to sleep that night.
No.
Can't sleep that night after you saw a grown woman naked.
Actually, he hasn't slept since.
Yeah. I'm a little, that's why I'm waking up late.
Yeah, that's where the name of the show came from.
That's where it all started. but that's amazing. So, you know, but, you know, the dedication to comedy. Yeah, I mean, you got, listen, like I said, I don't know. You're right. I've never missed a show.
Yeah.
I've never, you know, canceled on a show.
No, I'm not saying the guy who canceled on you today is, you know, the lowest form of life. I'm just also not saying that he isn't.
Right. Like you're saying, like,
it's up in the air whether he's the lowest.
It's not like you're kicked off the team, but you're sure as hell on getting a fucking gold medal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I don't even know him. I've never even met him.
Yeah, in all respect, the guy's coming from a long way.
Right. And it is raining.
It's raining. It's miserable. And, you know, it's not like a big pay, you know.
What?
No, you're you know, you're getting...
No, the features don't get big pay?
No, I mean, they get $75,
$100. Oh, wow. Wow, okay.
You know, sometimes if a combo come from a distance, but you know, I had to pay you your big bucks that you contracted.
I've come all the way from New York City.
I know. And it's another thing, I feel bad, because last time you here, we had like a run.
I know.
You know?
That's all right.
And I think what happened was I got... here's the thing. I for a long time, I was doing that where I was setting things up and putting things together and... And it's like so much work, because then you got three or four other venues that got to coordinate and stuff. Like Casey and I in the Sunrise Theater, you know, we keep in touch because we have a regular thing going. He's been doing it a long time. You know, there's other people that have come and gone.
Right.
You know, there's rooms that have come and gone.
Absolutely.
Haven't stuck around. So, and then, you know, my casino gig, by the way, the Seminole Casino here in Coconut Creek. We had our first show with Steve Marshall. Everything went well. Everything went great. They're like, hey, it's going to be a great budget, but it's on hiatus.
Okay, it's on hiatus.
Yeah, it's all on hiatus.
Well, so I always love that.
Yeah.
I always love that hiatus. That's kind of like laid off.
Yeah. It's like hiatus is another word for like, don't sit by the phone to wait for a ring.
It's on hiatus.
Yeah, it's hiatus means, you know, it's basically we're saying it's fucked.
Yeah, that's a polite, I think it's Latin, hiatus.
Hiatus means fucked.
It's Latin for fucked.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, I always make a point of coming down here in February because I really like the beautiful weather in Florida.
Right.
Yeah, and by the way, it's an absolute disaster out there today. Complete. And meanwhile, I check my app and it's like 65 and sunny in New York right now, so I'd rather be there. But no, I have some other stuff set up.
Right.
I got a corporate gig. I can't say where because of confidentiality, but I also noticed that there's a big poker tournament series going on at the Isle, so I'll be there next few days. So I mean, any trip to Florida, I can always make it work. So
perfect.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I'm excited for tonight. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't had a I haven't played live poker
really
and real cash games in a while now because money's been a little. We've been saving up for shit and paying off all, and there's no debt and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we're doing so, but I'm dying for some live games.
You could sell your kidney stones. I'm sure.
I know. It's not that big though. It's like a piece of rice. It's not, thank God. I'm still, I had a friend of mine who told me he had a kidney stone. It was like the size of a gumball.
Nah, that's like, I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah, dude, I don't know.
That's horrifying.
Our listeners don't want to hear this, but when had this thing.
They don't want to hear it.
This pain.
They don't want to hear it.
Dude, I had my wife take the gun out of the room. I'm like, get the fuck, I'm going to fucking put a bullet in my head. This is the worst.
Now, what do you think? What do you think it is with the... do you know what I mean when I say that the culture of comedy in Florida seems petty to me as an outsider? I mean, what do you think is causing that? Like, wasn't there a time when, and we don't have to use names if you don't want to, but wasn't there a time when basically someone tried to swoop in to a venue that you booked and he tried to start booking that same venue or another, maybe it was another venue like right down the street?
Yeah. By the way, and since then, the particular individual we're talking about, he must say Jay Risk. Him and I had a big thing. He opened a room basically in the same shopping plaza on the same night. But since then, he came to me and he told me he apologized. He was fucked up and everything. And,
right.
What hasn't happened from it was the dozen or so hoople heads that, at that point decided they're going to get an attitude about me and have a certain way about me.
Yeah.
And you know what? And our good friend Steve Marshall says, what the fuck? Why do you give a fuck about these people?
That's right. I mean, you're the guy down here. But here's Steve's absolutely right, by the way. But I have a theory for you.
Yeah.
I think in New York, comics who don't like each other are super nice to each other anyway, because you never know which one's going to end up being the next whoever.
Right.
Probably all the people that ever talked trash about Amy Schumer regretted it when she was looking for writers for her show years later for her TV show or to get a part in her movie and all that kind of thing. And I think that maybe down here in Florida, all you guys know that your ceiling is much lower than that, so it doesn't matter if you talk trash about each other.
I know, yeah. But that's a great point. Like, think about that. What comes around goes around. And I'm at the same time. Listen, I'm pretty much, I wear my emotions on my sleeve.
You do.
If something comes out, if something happens, and it's always been for me because I've been that. I don't mind that with me. Like if someone says to me, "Hey, man, you're being this or you're being that or whatever." Right. All right, I'm not gonna get all like, "Oh, don't tell me how I am." My daddy. No. All right. Fuck. I can understand it. But that's what makes people better when you can realize.
How many people listening want to hear the rest of that? My daddy.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Everybody wants to know what happens after my daddy.
Yeah. If I was somebody who was like a victim, my daddy said I was special.
Yeah. Victim culture. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely that. And it's been funny about that. Like for me and where it's come in this area here. But I think that's true. I think it's true. Like. They've been around longer. Like there's probably enough people that fell off the cliff or fucked up in the New York comedy scene. It's been around so long.
Yeah.
Like there's probably names of people. Oh, you remember fucking Herschel? Oh, that fucking, you know what I mean? That guy could have been on SNL, but you remember when he called the other guy's wife a cunt?
Absolutely.
That wasn't
a
good idea.
Yeah.
Right? So that kind of shit happens. And I think that's what, that's what's going to happen here. We had something else that happened. I competed against somebody in a roast. And this one comic who's been kissing my ass to get fucking work, and this and that, and I even helped the fucking guy. He's basically dissing me when I'm in the bathroom pissing. He's in the hallway of the club. He's like, "Oh, I couldn't fucking vote for Dougie Almeida." Meanwhile, I'm in the bathroom.
You could hear him.
I can hear the fucking dope.
Now, wait. So the guy that you had roasted?
No. It was a friend of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that, I don't know if. Yeah. Okay. So, roast culture,
right,
used to be our thing. Comedians have intimacy issues. We are secretive people. We like to try to protect ourselves,
right?
And a bunch of comedians all in one room inevitably will destroy each other. And the deeper you can cut, the funnier it is to the other three people at the table,
right?
This has been going on since the beginning of comedy, and it's always been something that's private. It's kind of the spoken language, the secret language of comedians. No joke is too mean to tell another comedian from another comedian. Right. You know, upstairs at the Comedy Cellar, sitting at that table, you will hear the worst things about everybody, and they're all based in truth,
right?
Which is what makes it hurt even more. But then you have to laugh because it's like, man, you know, just nailed it, whatever. But now it's become a form of entertainment for the masses, and I think, and for younger comedians that might not have as much experience being around other comedians and just understanding comedy culture, I think it could be very damaging to be roasted before you're actually tough enough to take it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the idea of putting roasts on television or just like for them to be for the general public to consume, because, you know, that kind of put down humor can be very, it can just, they won't understand where it's supposedly coming from, and they might actually think that we hate each other.
Right, yeah.
If you heard the way I talk to my best comedian friends, you might think that we hate each other.
Yeah. Well, that happens on this show once in a while when John Levine would get in, and I would get into it. People are like, you guys are friends? Yeah, we're friends. But
yeah,
ideologically, we're different. But you would sit there and scream at each other because you would kind of know. You know what I mean? But
it's a thing, yeah.
But it's like in martial arts. Like, until you're a black belt, you don't really do full contact.
Right.
You know, you don't go exactly all out. You know, you can't have the fucking white, you can't have a white belt like trying to knock somebody out, next thing you know, they kick you in the balls.
Now, that's a perfect analogy.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly like that. And these comics that are like yellow belts in comedy are, you know, trying to roast each other, and then people catch feelings, and then they're like, they're posting about it on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, like, this seems like what Facebook has become is just airing of grievances.
I'm at the point with Facebook, especially all this political shit, where it's like, I'm moving away from it.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean. I've unfollowed countless people.
Yeah,
and I even lost, like, I told this before. We talk about professional, like, you know, somebody over an ideology,
right?
A comic. I posted, I posted something like, if you score under 600 credit score, you're really unqualified to be making any political posts. And I had, there was like over 150 posts, and there was one particular comic that wanted to debate me on it, that it wasn't funny.
Okay.
And that it was, you know, elite, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And I said, dude, it's a fucking satirical joke in a sense about political belief, you know, and,
right.
And he goes, oh, and he went through this whole fucking thing. And I started thinking, I got this guy booked on a gig. You know, I mean, I you know what I mean?
Yeah, why would he jeopardize his relationship with you over his feelings about a joke that you wrote? It's clearly you were trying to be funny. Now, whether you were successful or not, it really honestly doesn't matter. Like, I find it mildly humorous.
Right.
It's not like the best joke you've ever written, but and I could see where people might take offense to it.
Usually, people with a lower credit score,
right? Yeah, anyone who's got a credit score below 600, for example. But I think
I take offense to that.
Yeah,
no, sorry,
because
here.
I'm in the wrong half of it. I think that for comics to get to start getting in that culture of, no, you shouldn't say that because it's insensitive. Right. You know, where do we draw the line? I mean, I understand, like, in a special case of, like, making jokes about rape victims, I'll never find that funny.
Right.
I will never, ever laugh at any joke that makes fun of rape victims, okay? However, because there are so many people like me, there are also many, many comedians in New York who have made it their purpose in life to try to write that
to
perfect
that
joke.
After, yeah.
And like, that would be their crowning achievement, is if they made a successful, funny rape joke against the victims. I probably still will never laugh at such a joke. And yet, I will defend those comedians to the death, because I believe it's their right. And, you know, I believe in freedom of speech. I think that we should all be allowed to try to do whatever we want to try to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
If your intention is to try to make people laugh. But if you're using your comedy as an opportunity to bully people and to punch down and to hurt someone.
Stupid, yeah.
Yeah, or like, if you're racist and you think, oh, hey, come on, it's just a joke. In other words, you're hiding behind the comedy, but you actually are this awful person.
Yeah.
Then I will still defend your right to speak. And I won't be a fan of your comedy, and I also won't be a fan of you as an individual.
It's funny. You talk about, like, I was working with Rich Voss last week in Off the Hook, and you know, he gets pretty edgy at times, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing his thing. He was talking about black guys, stuff like that, and he goes, "Oh, you know, it's like, I work with thousands of black comics, and they make fun of white people all the time." He's like, he's
"Yeah."
Like, he's like, "White people crazy."
Yeah.
They pay taxes.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, You know, there's this concept of punching up or punching down, right? So if you're a black guy that's had certain disadvantages in your life because of your skin color, and you want to punch up at those that oppressed you, or at least whose ancestors probably oppressed your ancestors, depending how you look at things, that's a lot easier for audiences to swallow than the white guy insulting the black guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's kind of like, you want to make fun of rapists and how awful they are? Go ahead. You want to make fun of rape victims? That's punching down, and that's where I personally have a problem with it. And yet, I believe you should be allowed to try to do it, because
if it works and if it actually does work, you're like, wow, they actually kudos to them.
And I just don't think we should be telling each other what's okay to joke about or not.
Eventually, isn't it? It all ends up. This is it's like a free market system in a sense where eventually. What ends up happening is if it's working, you're getting work.
Yeah.
Or it's going to get caught. It's going to be that. It's going to be that viral or crazy where it's going to make you wormhole to the top end of, you know, what's hot in fucking comedy.
Right. When I first moved to New York, I wasn't even attempting to be a comedian. I was actually looking to become an actor. And I went to Caroline's one night and saw Rich Voss. That's how long he's been doing stand-up. He was at Caroline's before I even started in comedy. He was hilarious. He was on a show called the Hot 97 Hip Hop Comedy Show.
Yeah.
And he was the only white comedian on the show. He had a leather beret on, and he kind of had essentially what might be considered a hip hop attitude.
Right.
And he killed, and the audience was probably 95% black, and you know, they loved him.
Yeah. He was he was the first white comic to perform on the Def Comedy Jam.
Def Comedy Jam, right. Yeah. So he had a following, you know, in that world. So you know, Rich has a certain amount of street credit. If he wants to make a certain kind of joke, I think that he gets a little bit more leeway than maybe I would.
Isn't that interesting that you see that? Like it was a few weeks ago, I guess, it was a situation where George Lopez made a comment. Now, you know, what was weird about it, when I heard it, and I kind of heard it, and I didn't turn it up volume. I kind of heard it, but I wasn't listening loud, like hearing the woman speak kind of thing. And I kind of got a gist of him, like, so what's the, you know, when I heard just the joke he told, which was basically there's two rules in Spanish families, don't park in front of the house, I think, and don't bring home a black woman.
Okay.
Or something like that, or don't bring home a black, you know. I guess a black woman stood up, and he said, shut the fuck up, bitch, and he got a lot of heat for it.
No, I didn't even see this.
Oh, no?
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you've been in, who has it? You've been in a situation where somebody gets, you know, doesn't like your joke. Like, I was in Rocky Gap Casino a couple years ago.
And now you're just bragging.
No, I know, right?
And Rocky Gap Casino.
And Cumberland, Maryland.
Wow.
So you're old.
I don't even know where Cumberland, Maryland is. And I'm from Maryland.
It's near Flintstone, Maryland.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, sounds
a little more of the Flintstone.
Yeah.
So, but I made, I tell my joke about, I mentioned a Mexican. Yeah, it's a joke, and it's basically not even, it's a wordplay joke. It's not even about me. And the guy stands up, starts screaming at me, "You're fucking racist, dude! That's terrible." I go, "Dude, are you Mexican?" He goes, "No." I go, "What the fuck?"
Yeah,
you know. And he just went into it. And the guy was leaving, you know. And so, how are you going to deal with that? You know,
right? Well, that said, Doug, I believe that in order to be offended, he doesn't need to necessarily be Mexican,
right?
He just doesn't like racist humor, and he perceived your joke to be a racist joke, whether it is or not. And I think this is a problem in comedy, that audiences have become a little bit hypersensitive about certain kinds of jokes, where comics who want to make those kind of jokes have a problem. But I think it's the comics' problem, right? I mean, we can't tell the audience, no, you have to like my jokes.
Sure.
Right? It's like, if I did this joke and the people got offended, now I have very few jokes that anyone ever finds offensive, but I do have one. I'm planning to do it tonight about people who can't eat wheat because they have that new disease, the celiac disease. So I talk about this thing, and sometimes if people in the audience have the disease, similar to your credit score joke, if they have that credit score, they get offended, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to make it funny. It's a new joke, so it's still kind of, it's not as tested as some of my other stuff, and it might be a little bit more pushing the envelope because it's not exactly sensitive to people who have a disease. And that is, you know, I guess if I really think about it, that is punching down. But it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, but how many people are really in that boat?
Right. Well, I feel like now it's just more of a it's really more of a trend that right. when you go to restaurants, they want to know if you want the gluten-free menu because you can't eat wheat. And very few people actually have this illness, but it's become trendy to be like, oh, no, yeah, I don't eat wheat. Yeah, I'm gluten-free. I don't eat wheat. I mean, come on. Well, I mean, we're in South Florida, so I'm sure that there are all kinds of diet trends here that people just jump on. Yeah.
The South Beach diet where it's like cocaine and crack. This is the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Special guest 101 here with Clayton Fletcher, good friend and comedian out of New York, who's going to be at the Wise Guys Comedy Show tonight, although we'll probably post this sometime after. So, well, but we don't need to advertise. Yeah, Tavolino's every Wednesday. He's got a reputation. We got people coming.
Yeah, it's every single Wednesday. The every food's Wednesday. Amazing. The comics are great.
We got full liquor.
Unbelievable.
You know, we're not going to charge $35 to come to some fucking howdy-toddy place and give you a pretzel and wine. You know, you can get a fucking, this isn't a pizzeria. Like some
in my head,
say.
I'm like, one of Doug's petty rivals has a show at a pretzel joint that serves wine. and he's a little dig at that person.
Yeah,
right
some here. Guy who keeps calling Tavolino's a pizza joint with a back room.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it is not. I mean, I tell you, I've performed all over the world, Doug. Yeah. And you rarely find places where everything is just first class. I mean, the food is amazing. The lighting is great. The sound system is great. You forget that you're performing in a restaurant. This place is one of my favorite gigs that I do every year. I'm really excited for tonight.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking about comedy, and you mentioned this about on Facebook, and it was actually on that one post about the 600 credit score.
Yeah.
One of my good friends, longtime client of mine, actually, he says, I really enjoy seeing the interaction between the comics on your Facebook post. So
that's interesting.
That's why we get so many. It's funny when my comedy friends kind of meet and somehow rub up against my regular friends.
Right.
You know,
worlds collide.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, one of my friends, he's basically saying, it's like, I'm amazed at like almost the variety of people and their beliefs and their backgrounds that are comics. And, you know, it's not like, you know, most people who are accountants.
They're kind of cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, they mean they're analytical. They're all, you know, they're this.
They had high SAT scores in math.
Yeah, and a lot of them didn't grow up saying, I'm going to be an accountant. They ended up saying, oh, this is what I'm good at.
What am I good at? I'm stuck with this.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to see, I hate people. And they they fall into that thing.
And I have these glasses with a chain on them. I might as well put them around my neck and get to work.
I got this pocket protector that my uncle gave me, who also is an accountant, I guess, trying to persuade me. And I thought about it. I was thinking about it in the sense that, because I think it's really true, especially of comedy, because I don't do comedy because of the people I get to hang with. I don't do comedy for the money. I don't do comedy. I do comedy for comedy. I do comedy for solely, if anybody says, why the hell you do it? I just do it for that feeling of being in front of people and making them laugh.
Well, you do it, and you put on a lot of miles. You'll go anywhere, virtually anywhere, for any amount of money.
I know.
To do any gig, any place.
My wife right now sitting by the radio going, although she's all excited. You talk about new jokes. I have a new joke that, you know, about me flying. Like, my wife's all excited now because Amex will give her $500,000 if I die in an airplane.
Oh, that's the insurance on the card,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So wants me to fly to Tavolino's tonight. I'm like, fucking, what do you want?
Yeah,
it's a 5-minute car drive. But is there anything better than when a new joke or a new bit? Now, like, I've been happy, and we were talking about a fellow comic earlier who's doing great, right? This particular woman's his name in lieu of this, but he was a great comic. We both respect this person. We think this person, we wish we were in this person's shoes.
Absolutely.
And this particular person's like, like you're dealing with doldrums in a sense.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like there's no end game in this business.
Well, I'll mention another comic, not the one we were just talking about, but I had a conversation a while back with Jessica Kirsten. Mm-hmm. She's done The Tonight Show like 5 times. She's in a movie now with Robert De Niro. I could spend the whole show just telling you all of her credits. And one of the things she said to me recently that just really blew my mind, she's like, you know, Clayton, I'm just really struggling to try to get where I want to be. And I was like, well, can I get where you are?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, pull me up there with you and I'll help you get to the
next
level.
Yeah, right. But, you know, it just goes to show that it's kind of like golf. You never really master it.
Right.
You know, and really a lot of the things that attract me in life are like this. Like poker, you know, I talk about poker a lot. because it's my, kind of my other career. I make about half my income from playing cards. And it's a game that's so fascinating because you'll never fully master it. It can't be solved.
Well, isn't that true? Because the elements always change, and that you sit at a new table.
Yeah, you're at a different table. You got to play a little bit differently. You got to figure out and all the different variables. And similar to comedy, and that's why some veteran comedians will try to do the more edgy jokes because they know that it's going to be that much harder. It has to be that much funnier to get that laugh. And what's funny when you're 5 years into comedy won't be funny to you anymore. 10 years later, but it would still be funny to the audience. And I think that's where some people kind of lose their way, is we forget that our job is to make the audience laugh.
Right.
It's not to entertain ourselves or each other.
Exactly.
I mean, if we can do both, that's even great.
Although I've seen some comics on stage make themselves laugh, which really is it's one of the things that drives me nuts. Right. When I see a comic tell a joke and laugh their own jokes every time, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
it's not bad if they're laughing along with the audience.
Yeah.
It's just when that comic is the only person in the room who's laughing.
Exactly.
Say, okay, well. Like,
I guess no one else got it.
Yeah.
And it's just to me, but the only way that I combat, I've always dealt with that, because I always look about, okay, where am I now, but where, and compared to where I've been the last couple of years. And, you know, like the last few years, okay, I'm working, I'm getting new rooms, I'm working new places. And the advancement for me is like, yeah, I'm basically working 35, 40 weekends a year, you know, which is a lot of work. And I'm blessed to have a career that pays the bills, that I can go anywhere and be anywhere to do it. In a sense.
You have the luxury of being an amateur in the sense of the actual meaning of that word from the Latin for love. An amateur is someone who does something for the love of it.
I got you.
Not that you're no good. But I hope I will always be an amateur. I hate when people ask me, are you a professional comedian or are you a professional poker player? I like to say I'm an amateur at both, because no matter how much money I make doing either one, I do it for the love. I mean, these are the two things that my passions in life are, these two things that
at the poker table, then you walk away with like 15 grand in a cash game. You're like, yeah, I'm a fucking amateur.
And that's when you really feel the love, is when you walk away with $15,000.
That matters more than a label. You know, comics say, if somebody says, you consider yourself a professional, I go, no, I consider myself a working comic.
To me,
a professional comic, I always think of athletics.
Right. You know, are you in the minor leagues or the major leagues?
Yeah,
right.
Professional are the ones at the big leagues. So to me, the professional comics are Louis C.K., you know, Jerry Seinfeld. Those are the professional comics. I'm just this guy touring around, still fucking, like you're saying, building it, you know.
And there are people that look up to you that you don't realize. This is the sick thing about our business. There are probably so many people that you're not even aware of that say, man, look at Doug. He's going to that. And like sometimes you'll post a picture of the place you're going to be performing, like this is tonight's venue. And I know there are people that look at that and say, man, if I work really hard, I can get to where Dougie is, you know. And then you look at somebody else and say, I like to get where that person is. And Jessica Kirsten is looking up to God knows who, saying, I want to get, you know, to me, she's one of the top five funniest people on the planet. And
it's kind of like a human centipede.
We're all looking up. Everybody's looking up. Except maybe, I don't know, who's on top at the moment? Is it Bill Burr? I guess Bill Burr. But I'd love to ask him, like, who do you want to be when you grow up? Because everybody seems to be looking up. But you don't realize that you have come far. And, I mean, I met Doug at a club that doesn't even exist anymore here in Florida. And, you know, he opened for me and was a really nice guy that didn't really get that many laughs. And I was like, you asked me for advice or something. And I'm always at a loss when like a brand new comic asks me for advice, because I don't feel like I'm an authority, like I could tell you what to do. But I said, you know, just keep writing, keep working. If you really want it, it can happen. And I know this because when I started in comedy, I very seldom got any laughs. But I just really wanted to. And I mean, you might think I'm just saying that.
That wasn't my fault that night, by the way. It was a bad crowd.
No, you sucked. Because you were new, and we all suck when we're new.
Sure.
And we have to accept that. And if you're new and if you're listening to this and you're a stand-up comedian who's been doing it for less than 3 years, you suck, believe me.
Yeah.
But someday you might be good if you really work hard.
Yeah, and accept that. You know, to know oneself is to know God is an old mantra I studied when I was in my 30s, because it profoundly hit me. Like, it wasn't just knowing who, it's more like knowing what you can't do and what you're not expected to do. And, you know, and be happy with those things, and, you know, and move on and all kinds of things. So, yeah, but it's, and that's it. I mean, it's, you never know when it's going to end, or something like that. You know, I was thinking about embarrassing moments you brought up, in comedy. You brought up, Dustin Chafin, who, you know, runs the Greenwich Village Comedy Club. Right?
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he's you can see him a lot. He's been on the Red Eye with Tom Shuley. What's his name? Shuley?
Yeah, Shulu.
Shulu, a regular bit. Yeah, it's great. Now, and you know, because I've met you guys around the same time, and I was making my way into New York trying to get some dates and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And you and I became friends, and he was very tough on me at first because he's Dustin. And you know, but, you know, since then, we're friends. Now we're really close.
There's
millions
of comics trying to get into a club. People that come to New York and they say, oh, it's everybody's, you know, it's really hard to break in. Of course, it has to be. There's so many of us, and there are only so, you know, there's only so many spots to give out. You know, oh, it's some guy from Florida that thinks he's going to get on. And then you come seven or eight more times, and it's like, oh, that guy from Florida, he's not going anywhere. Yeah. It's almost like you have to kind of...
Yeah, he called me herpes. he called me herpes outside Greenwich Village. I was bringing that up. He's like, you still remember that, huh? And
that's great.
Well, I'll never forget it. But you know what? It's funny because when he said it to me, it wasn't like I looked at him and go, fuck, you know, it wasn't like I got real combative about it. I recognized it. Yeah. I understood, what, you know, and again, I knew where I was in that moment. I knew where I stood in that moment.
Yeah.
And I deserved it. And then that's what else am I to expect?
What I've seen with you over the years, you never had a sense of entitlement. You stayed humble. And even when you get some success, you know, like that thing that happened for you in Vegas and some of the other, you know, bump ups that you've gotten, like where you used to MC and now you feature, or you used to feature and now you headline. I've never seen it go to your head or that you get a big ego.
Yeah,
you know, and that would just destroy your brand if you did get a big ego.
Oh, you didn't have him walked out to the living room as that big self portrait of me on a horse in a Napoleon outfit.
I mean, most of Dougie's material is self deprecating, and so if he gets a big ego, you can't be a big ego guy.
Can't
and be self deprecating at the same time. It doesn't work that way.
No, and let's talk about something else, and then we're gonna probably go because we got to get to the show.
Yeah,
but regarding material, like I always found it interesting. Like one of my goals this year is to really, by the end of the year, come up with a whole new 30 minutes, you know, of just new stuff that, you know, if I want to go on stage, I could do 30, 35 minutes and then go up another night, just do a whole different 30, 35 minutes. And each of those sets being equally as good, you know, in other words. And I think this in the last few weeks, a month or so, I've gotten about, I'd say really, over the last few months, two or three months, I've developed new material. Now, some of it has been new. It's like brand new jokes, like a brand new bit. Some of it has been stuff that's been added on to existing bits.
Right.
Right? Now, you know, my question though has been, is like I'll give you an example. Like right now, I'm going to do a new bit tonight. And instead of relating to my wife and doing stuff with my wife and doing my stuff, my acting out, act out stuff. But it's going to be about my father-in-law.
Okay.
And basically the premise is my father-in-law, Somebody has instilled in him to have a conversation with me about the subject of premature ejaculation.
He wants to talk about that.
Like somehow, I don't know. He's like, he's not telling me. He's like, you know, your wife never said nothing. I don't know. It just came up, you know. I just want to talk to you about this, you know.
That's not a conversation any married guy wants to have with his father.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's an awkward moment, you know, and here we are having a communication breakdown and stuff. So, but it's like, to me, that's like a whole new bit. Like, it doesn't have to, but if I'm doing a headline set or something like that, I'm going to do my other stuff that I've been doing and then bring that all alive in a whole bit. Or is it better to write new stuff that's completely, basically not even linked or related to something else you're already doing?
No, I mean, I think you can do either one.
Yeah.
The audience doesn't care. As long as it's funny, they don't care if I change subjects every 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, like, look at Mitch Hedberg. He didn't have a through line. He didn't have a, you know, I don't know if everyone who's listening is familiar with Mitch Hedberg, but if you're not, do yourself a huge favor
right now.
Google Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
By far, you know, one of the greatest of all time. Died young, drugs, whatever. Yeah. But he put out some great stuff, and he could change the subject 3 times in 1 minute.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem herky jerky, and it still made sense. Because it was more of a stream of consciousness kind of writing style, and just brilliant, just so smart, genius material.
Yeah, no one's going to complain if a lighthouse is throwing out a red light, a blue light, a green light, a red light.
Right.
It's the lighthouse.
It's the lighthouse,
you know?
Exactly.
And that's what, like, Hedberg was.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I can't remember who exactly it was, but a comedian gave me this advice which is, you know, it was always blessing when somebody takes the time to help out, like, and say something like that. Not just say, oh, you were great, dude, whatever. It was great.
Yeah.
You know, and say, look, keep writing, keep getting on stage, you know. Basically, I knew when you said that, you weren't going, you were basically saying, look, you suck. But, you know, it was, but you didn't say, look, you suck. I've had people say, dude, you're horrible. You're going to have a lot to learn. And even then, I'm like, really? You didn't, like, I got a few laughs. You know what I mean? But it's amazing. So,
but where you're at, you don't know where you're at, you know, because you're in it. You're in it. The audience is not in it.
Listen, I recently threw away a bunch of CDs I had of my early performances.
Because you're so embarrassed.
I thought I wanted to save them. You know, I looked at one and go, get rid of that thing.
Let's destroy the evidence.
Yeah, that never existed.
And every comic has that. That's what's beautiful about this. Even if you're super hilarious, like, I've seen comics make their debuts and it's incredible. But then, after that, if you're trying to get better, you're not going to do that same 5 minutes you do on your debut for the rest of your life.
Right.
There's growing pains with this, and we all have to learn how to do it and how to find our own voices and everything. So, you know, you got your Mitch Hedberg. He can do, you know, it's not exactly one-liners, but just kind of changing subject frequently.
Right.
And then there are other comics that only talk about one subject, or primarily one subject. And I don't think there's a right or wrong. I think as long as everybody's laughing, then you're doing it right.
Yeah. And
unless you stole it, that's no good.
Well, yeah, that's just, you know, thievery in that sense. All right. I think we've talked enough.
Anybody comes to New York, come check out the Clayton Fletcher Show at Greenwich Village Comedy Club every Friday night at 8 o'clock. If they follow me on Twitter, I can, you know, my Twitter followers get discounts and free tickets and stuff like that. It's at Clayton Comic, all one word, C-L-A-Y-T-O-N-C-O-M-I-C. And I might even follow you back.
Yeah, he might.
No promise.
Yeah, you know, like Instagram. I'm on, my Dougie Dangerous Instagram. You can't find, like I used to just follow people and they follow me. But then I realized I'm losing followers. Like, people will follow you. Then once you follow them, they unfollow you. So, like, now I'm not following anybody unless I really know who the hell they are.
Focus on who you're following, not who's following you.
Yeah.
That's sage advice.
Yeah.
I think Gandhi
focus
said,
on
who you're following.
Who you're following.
Not who's
not
following.
Not who's following you.
Yeah. I believe that's Gandhi.
Oh, I wonder if, see, Gandhi knew about it, Instagram.
Yeah, Gandhi had 5 million followers, so easy for him to say.
Yeah, easy for him to say. He doesn't give a shit if he loses 2 or 3 people.
Yeah, he could retweet whoever.
Yeah, he looks down there, he's like, fuck, I had, like I went from 7,900 to fucking 7,882. What the fuck? I can't have this. This isn't right. Anyway, that's all we have time for here, the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show special. We're one-on-one here with Clayton Fletcher. We'll be back next week, by the way, guys, with all new shows with our new Monday co-host, Ciro Dobrik. Fazel Malik will be joining us as a special guest from the South Florida comedy scene. And, of course, Peter Leonard and Elgin David. By the way, don't forget to go to our YouTube page at Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. We have a new video on there of Elgin David from MTV's Wildin' Out, who's here on Tuesdays, who is trying to get a ball from my dog.
Well,
it's an epic video, and it's...
If that doesn't get a million hits,
it's
then
hilarious.
You did it wrong.
It's just great. Go to that. Subscribe to it, of course, and follow us on Twitter, Wake Up Dougie, and our fan page on Facebook, Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks.
My pleasure.
We'll have some fun here at Tavolino's now, and we'll see you guys here next week at the same spot. Take care.
People of the earth, can you hear me? Came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they traveled to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside, the beam of light hit the ground. Through the door.